Hi, I'm Maggie Brennan, music director here at WCBE. We're excited to announce our new web exclusive, Live from Studio A Replay, where you can listen to some of our best Studio A sessions. We're dedicated to bringing you great music from around the world and from right here in Central Ohio. And that type of extraordinary service is only possible with your support. So please, consider making a donation of any amount by clicking the red donate button at the top of the page and keep the music going. And we thank you for your support.
And that's Fresh Air, weekdays at 3 o'clock right here on WCBE. Good afternoon. I'm Rochelle Anzac, and I'm live in Studio A with Peter Rowan. He has a new CD out titled The Old School. Welcome, Peter.
It's nice to be here back in old Columbus, Ohio. Scene of many a bluegrass music moment here. Yeah.
Great. We are delighted to have you here today, and a Grammy Award winner, a six-time Grammy nominee. And I'm going to sit down and talk here with Peter about his new release and his six-decade-long musical career. But first, I want to give our audience a taste of what they're going to hear tonight at the show. What's this first song called?
Well, if I play it now, I probably won't play it tonight. But this is a little guitar study, something I've been working on. It's not quite bluegrass, but it's one of the branches on the great tree. Sets the scene. Spanish moss hanging from a honeysuckle vine. Muddy river rolling slow, passing time. Love like a fire burning through the night. Gather in the warmth of the light. Of a lifetimes of change, they come and go again. And the angels and animals, keepers of the flame, stand beside us, guide us again. Angels and animals, guardians of the light, stand beside us and guide us through the endless night. Hey. Thank you. from a honeysuckle vine. Muddy river rolling slow, passing time.
Thank you. And the love of your music, I'm sure, will guide many to your show tonight at Woodlands Tavern. This is Peter Rowan live from Studio A, and we're speaking with him. You're on tour in support of your new album. It's called The Old School, and it's an album that was heavily influenced by the early years of your career playing bluegrass with bluegrass legend Bill Monroe. Mm-hmm. I read that you wrote this album with the bluegrass code in mind.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that you could share with our audience what the bluegrass code is and how this album came to be.
Well, I began to think of bluegrass as, you know, sort of an embattled music for so many years. The players tightened up their relationships and their way of playing to be able to make the music survive and give it a good cutting edge and give it some feeling. And the people like Carter Stanley of the Stanley Brothers and Jimmy Martin, of course, Bill Monroe, were singers that when I was a 20-year-old and joining Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys, these were the singers I admired. Lester Flatt, of course, Earl Taylor from up around these parts. Their ability to really put a song over. And bluegrass has great singer-songwriters that go unnoticed because of the style being the predominant sign of the music. But the singer-songwriters being Carter Stanley, the great Carter Stanley, and Bill Monroe, Jimmy Martin wrote some great ones. And I thought I would do an album of songs that I would like them to do.
Okay.
So I'm... You know, they're not around anymore, but these are the songs that I think their style would want to have in their category, you know, and consolidate their sound with my tunes. Anyway, it was in honor of them that I started pulling it together, and the old school guys are, in the words of Vassar Clements, as it says in the old school song, drive all night, shave in cold water, raise your hand up high and smile. And that's the rule of the old school. It's just you take the show on the road, you know, and you keep the music alive. You keep bringing it for the people. That's part of it, yeah.
You've been doing it for 6 decades now. And this album, it was a collaboration. So not only are you giving a nod to the people that... you know, helped influence you, but you brought along some young players on the scene, like the Traveling Mercuries, Michael Cleveland, Brian Sutton, to play on this album. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you had longtime musicians like Bobby Osborne. And I read that you all sat together in a circle.
Yeah.
You sang and you played, and then you recorded it old school style, hence the name of the album.
Right, yeah.
And if you could enlighten me about why you chose this type of recording style and how it translates to what our listeners are going to hear tonight at Woodlands Tavern.
Well, I'll be playing solo tonight, and I'll be doing the roots of the bluegrass style. I'll be doing Jimmy Rogers and Bill Monroe and Peter Rowan songs. The approach to recording to do it live is just like we're doing it here. Try and get a feeling of the moment and take it beyond just a way to, you know, try and make the music count every time. That's the idea. And to give life to a song, the old school approach, I think, has more to do with feel or has more feeling in it because of its live recording techniques. Nowadays, music sounds beautiful, clean, very clean, but not that much of it is done spontaneously in the studio. Usually it's done with layers of overdubbing and everything. So the old school people are those folks on this on this CD who still maintain that original bluegrass approach. It's just let it happen in the studio, let it really go down. And it's not limited to those on this record, mm-hmm. because there's many more members of the old school in their own individual way of doing it. But Bobby Osborne and Jesse McReynolds as mandolin players were the guys that were I heard play when I was 21, 22 years old. And so to have them on the record was really special.
Yeah, coming full circle there.
Yeah.
It's your second album for Compass Records. It includes some new original songs like Doc Watson Morning, Drop the Bone, Keeping It Between the Lines, Old School. And after all these years, six decades of being in the music business, where do you find your inspiration to create new material?
Well, once I got the idea of what this record was going to sound like, I started finding that way in the writing of the songs. You know, I knew it was going to be bluegrass, and I've been touring with my own bluegrass bands pretty steadily for about the past 6 years. Before that, it was Tony Rice and I were touring. We both as a duet and with a four-piece band called the Quartet. So I felt that the pump was pretty well primed to continue in this fashion. But it's nice to do something that's a tribute, yet not redoing all the old material. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, go to the roots of bluegrass music, where Bill Monroe found him. And he spent a long time in New Orleans and really brought a lot of that early Dixieland kind of jazz, the kind of punch in the music, brought it into bluegrass. Mm-hmm. And but he was staying true to his roots as a country kind of guy. He didn't add brass. But he did have D. Ford Bailey playing harmonica, and D. Ford was a black man, lived down in Nashville, Tennessee, was on the Grand Ole Opry, did the Panamanian Blues, had a hit record on that, and the Evening Prayer Blues was another one Bill recorded. Bill really admired D. Ford's music, and I think it's not known that well how much, blues and black music really influenced Bill Monroe. His uncle, Penn Vandiver, was the big inspiration for young Bill and took him in as an orphan kid when he was about 8 years old. And Bill Monroe would tell stories of riding on the back of a mule going up to a square dance, and there was Penn Vandiver's guitar man, another black man named Arnold Schultz. So Arnold was from New Orleans, and he spent the winters in New Orleans, so he brought back a lot of things that tickled the ears of a young Bill Monroe. And I didn't want to just make copy tunes.
Okay.
I wanted to make tunes that came from that original spring, that fountainhead where Bill went. And really, the idea of writing songs is something about being open and still, it's hard to do day-to-day life if you're a songwriter, I can tell you that, because you go into these places that are moods and the song won't leave you alone, as Ralph Stanley said, you got to burn the midnight oil on some of these things.
And I did read that, you really liked Bill Monroe's style because it was a lot more bluesier, than other styles of bluegrass. It had that edge to it, and that's what attracted you to it.
Yeah. As I became aware of folk music, I had a little rock and roll band. We were going around, we were playing dances for kids, when we were 14 years old. And then I heard this record by this guy named Leadbelly. He does this, black girl, don't you lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? And Bill Monroe was singing, in the pines, where the sun never shines. Shivered when the cold wind blows. So I thought that was cool that Bill Monroe was playing this rootsier stuff. And the first record I heard of his only had a fiddle and mandolin and guitar and bass. It didn't have any banjo or accordion or anything. And I started to learn his stuff. And when I went with him, I had already learned most of his material, so I could say, let's do this duet that you used to do. And, okay. And he'd be there. But let me play you a song.
Okay, yes.
Kind of it kind of illustrates my where I've come with the blues in the old school style.
I really enjoy your stories, and I've been, you know, told that you are a fantastic storyteller. Before I bring another individual into the conversation, we had a lot of activity on our Facebook page where people were very excited that you were coming to town. So I did say that I would take one question from our Facebook fans and ask you that question.
All right.
And Jeff Cummings wrote, what are your thoughts on some of the new indie bands like Mumford and Sons who incorporate traditional bluegrass instruments like the guitar and banjo with piano and drums?
I love them. I do.
Good answer.
You know, good original sounds. Really good. Now, I don't know that many more indie bands, there's a guy in bluegrass who's really burning it up, Frank Solvang and Dirty Kitchen. Mumford and Sons, yeah, they're going to be at Telluride again this year. And they definitely have a lot of roots in different parts of the music. Their use of the banjo is unique in that in bluegrass we've been trying to play both beats. We've been trying to play, boom chang, boom chang. Mumford and Sons, they just get rid of the chang, and they just go boom, 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 which alleviates some of the effort that it requires to play the bluegrass two beats. They just play the one beat, but the banjo, strangely enough, can keep up with all of it. And it's just totally refreshing to hear what they and some other bands are doing. I think they're the most successful, but I haven't heard a lot of others.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for answering that question from our Facebook fans. And again, I'm live in Studio A with Peter Rowan, who will be at Woodlands Tavern tonight. Woodlands Tavern is located at 1200 West 3rd Avenue in Grandview, and you can get all the details about the concert at woodlandstavern.com. Right now, I'd like to bring another member of our staff into the conversation today. He's been a longtime fan of yours since the 1970s. And Peter, I would like to introduce you to our underwriting director, Jim Coe.
Jim Coe, pleasure to meet you.
Well, yeah. It's great to meet you, Peter. I've heard you in concert solo and with Tony Rice and Sharon and Bryn, and with Vassar at the Southern Theater a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I've been a fan for over 40 years, and it's kind of started with C-Train, so I'm working my way backwards. Mm-hmm. Sally Gooden, that single you guys did with C-Train changed my my life. But soon after C-Train, you helped form a bluegrass supergroup, actually two of them in a row. One was known as Mule Skinner, and soon after that, Old and In the Way. Tell our listeners a little bit about who were in those groups, how they came together.
Well, I guess Richard Green and myself had just finished a... Richard Green's a fiddle player who did the Sally Gooden solo, and he and I were in Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys, and then he was in the Jug Band, and I had a band called Earth Opera with Dave Grisman. And we were just trying to, you know, find a way to survive. Bluegrass itself wasn't paying the bills, so we played into our generational music more. But we never lost our love for bluegrass. So the post-Bill Monroe 5 years was... two records for with Earth Opera, and then two records with C-Train for Capitol Records with George Martin producing. And somebody said the other night, did you ever think what that was really all about? And I said, I was just going with the flow. And he said, well, you went from Bill Monroe to be produced by the Beatles producer George Martin. So it's just a blessing. It's just some kind of, like, I'm getting hip to my own good luck, but at the time it was just sort of, there was no plan. It's just what was going on. So, okay, that's 60. I left Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys in 68. 69, 70 was Earth Opera. And then by 70 and 71, we were doing C-Train with Richard Green and I joining forces again in a band that was made up from members of the Blues Project from New York City. And that went for 2.5 years. Seemed like everything had a 2.5 year shelf life. And mostly it's just the grind of the road finally just makes you want to do something else. So we came out to California, and I left that band behind on the East Coast, where we would just play college. We'd rehearse all week and play colleges on the weekend. And I came back out west to see my brothers who were working with Dave Grisman, working on a record for Columbia Records. And one day when David and I were walking around the beach barefoot playing bluegrass, he said, hey, you know, Garcia lives up the hill. Let's go see Jerry. So we went up the hill, and of course, Jerry knew we were coming, and he met us in the front yard with his banjo on, and we started playing Pig in a Pen, and this is where we went from there. That was only 5 years after leaving Bill Monroe, so it was like an amazing amount of things going on. So if bluegrass wasn't like number one on everybody's list, all these offshoots were. And also Clarence White had just left the Byrds. The great guitarist had just left the Byrds, and he was in Los Angeles, you know, he'd left the road at the same time that I had left C-Train. And with Bill Keith and Dave Grisman and a bunch of these pickers, we were traveling all over the country at the time. That's the whole wave. I think we just moved around more. You know, kids today pretty much lock themselves down into one locale, and they build their thing out of that. That's a good thing. But we were traveling all the time. We were just moving around all over the place, you know, East Coast, West Coast, drive across the country, go camp out in Indian lands, right, land of the Navajo. And, you know, it just like it seemed this country was endless with its musical possibilities and these collaborations with these guys. So Jerry Garcia was still playing with the Grateful Dead. And the co-emergent two projects were what we called Old and In the Way with Jerry Garcia, and then a shift over to L.A. was a Mule Skinner, which probably Clarence White's contribution was the spark plug of that. But these were all young players in their 20s, and we never had enough to do. So, you know, when these opportunities arose, we jumped on it. And Old and In the Way started out, had Richard Green on fiddle, and had John Hartford on fiddle. And finally one day I called Vassar, because I had his number from when I was a bluegrass boy. And he said, yeah, Dad, blame it, I'd love to do that. And he flew in Medicine Boston, and we did a tour. And somebody showed me that Olden and the Way only existed for a very short time, but it seemed like a few years of playing was put into it.
Well, you mentioned Jerry Garcia, and I'd like you, if you can, to corroborate a story. You probably are acquainted with Sandy Rothman.
Yeah.
Sandy was a bluegrass boy, and I think mm-hmm. still lives in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
He lived in Columbus for a while.
Yes.
And he, because of his Bay Area connection, was a friend of Jerry's.
Yes.
And it's pretty well documented that mm-hmm. Jerry wanted to be a bluegrass boy, that his mm-hmm. his first musical love was folk and bluegrass, and that he played banjo, as you mm-hmm. just said.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly, according to Sandy, Jerry joined Sandy here in Columbus
right.
so that he could immerse himself in the rich bluegrass culture that existed in this town mm-hmm. in the early 60s. And, of course, this was pre-Grateful Dead.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know if you've heard a story like that, but it'd be I think our Columbus listeners would just kind of like elevate another level or two if they knew that at one time Jerry Garcia was a resident of Columbus.
I don't know if Jerry was a resident. I think, it was one of those gypsy kind of things. I think he was traveling through with Sandy. And I know that it's documented on Jesse McReynolds' last solo album, which is all Grateful Dead songs, Hunter Garcia songs, the story of them, Jerry wanting to go here. I wanted to join Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys. And I think in the end he didn't do it. He chickened out. But that's what I hear. Now, I may be wrong, folks. But one thing that did happen was that they, on their pilgrimage out here, and I guess Sandy already knew Earl Taylor, they did listen to Jim and Jesse a lot. They heard Jim and Jesse on the radio in Columbus. They stayed in Columbus. It was in the motel where they saw Jim and Jesse's TV show. And I think they went out to either up in Pennsylvania, Sunset Park, or what was the park over on this side?
You know, Frontier Ranch.
Frontier Ranch. I played Frontier Ranch a bunch of times with Bill Monroe. So that was the center. Now, if you wanted to hear bluegrass and you were a kid at that time, you had to come out to where it was. You had to cross the country. I mean, it was a different thing. You'd drive 2 or 3 days straight just to get to where the bluegrass was. Nowadays, it's all on the web. You know, you can get everything off the web, but no, it wasn't like that back then. So, yeah, Jerry Garcia came out here, folks. He hung out right around the corner and picking up on the bluegrass sounds.
Well, I'm fond. You're a consummate storyteller. I'm not going to be shy about saying that. Good example is the Free Mexican Air Force. I'm sure you'll tell some stories tonight. You are a consummate showman, and now I've discovered that you're quite a music educator. One of my favorite shows of all time, I'll never forget it, it was about 10 years ago at a club here in Columbus mm-hmm. called Little Brothers. It mm-hmm. was a solo show of yours. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed on how, and you probably get hecklers here and there, and there was a particular heckler that kept, and I think besides being inebriated by the spirit of Peter Rowan in the room, I think he had some help from the bartender.
Sure, that happened.
But he kept shouting out Stinson Beach.
Oh, yeah.
And you played with him in a very compassionate way. You didn't get your dander up. Yeah. If anything, it was almost like he was planted as part of your act. So I want to tell you that I've always admired that compassion that you have. But what is your performance philosophy in situations like that? And how have you developed? I mean, it's one thing to be a great musician, but how have you developed as a storyteller?
Well, I paid attention to the stories in my head. And, you know, if you try and meditate, all your stories are going to be there. So the only way to deal with them is either, like, write them down so they're on a page and you can forget about them, or listen to your mind tell you the story. Then things get a little calmer and the mind is a little more open. And usually when I go on stage, I don't have any idea of what I'm going to do. I found myself telling stories because I was embarrassed. I was in England. And, I mean, they really know the language, and so they appreciate quirkiness and a little bit of an Americana approach to things. And I like the theatrical aspect of performing a lot, and done it since I was a kid, ever since I sang to a broomstick on a hill outside my dad's garden. We used to do these back porch concerts, and we'd get all the neighborhood girls to sit down in the garden chairs on the back porch, and the back porch was the stage. We'd come out and dance around, me and my brothers, and, you know, we were inspired by Elvis Presley at that point. But when I was touring England, I felt like, man, these people do not know where I'm coming from. And so I think I wanted to tell stories to give them a little help and make it more interesting for the audience, because otherwise it's a sort of a cultural vacuum. I'll sing you a song with the story that goes with it. This is a story that I developed in those solo folk clubs in England. When I was a bluegrass boy working for Bill Monroe, we used to play the Grand Ole Opry every Saturday night. Then we'd climb aboard that old bus called the Bluegrass Breakdown, and we'd drive down the highway through that long Kentucky night. We were heading for Bean Blossom, Indiana, home of the Brown County Jamboree. And it was about sunrise when the Bluegrass Breakdown lived up to its name, and we were stranded on the highway in Kentucky near a place called the Horse Caves. And Bill Monroe walked up to me as I was watching the sunrise to the east, and he said, "Listen good to this, Pete, and don't you ever forget it. We wrote a song called The Walls of Time." The wind is blowing across the mountain and down over the valley way below. It sweeps the grave of my darling. When I die, that's where I want to go. Send angels for my darling and take her to that home on high. I'll wait my time out here on earth, love, and come to you.
Peter Rowan, live from Studio A. It has been our pleasure, as I speak on behalf of Jim Coe and myself, Rochelle Anzac, to have you in our studio today. And, you know, there's so much material to cover when you have a 60-year-long career. We've only touched the surface, so I encourage our listeners to come out tonight. Visit his website. It's peter-rowan.com. And if we may hear one more song, it was fabulous to meet you. Thank you again for stopping by.
Well, I'm keeping it between the lines, riding many a mile. Drive all night, shave in cold water, raise your hand up high and smile. You got to pick it clean, play it true, you know that's the rule. Sing it like you mean it, through and through. Don't let them keep you down. I'm in Columbus Town. I'm keeping it between the lines. That's the rule of the old school.